Welcome to Magic Minds. I'm Matt Bourke. Today's guest is Dr. Isoza Okorie. Dr. Isoza Okorie had a brain injury in 2013, so he joins us today on the podcast to give us his experience of what it's like to have a brain injury, be a doctor and a consultant, and also be legally blind. So hopefully you enjoy the show. Dr. Isoza Okorie, welcome to Magic Minds.
It's just me sitting down having a chat with you. I just want to get your story out there. To me, it's an inspiration story. It's quite fascinating. You're an interesting guy, and I want to share that with our listeners. So look, start me off. Where did you grow up, study, all that kind of stuff?
Okay. I was actually born a long time ago. I was born in Nigeria, but my parents emigrated to the United States to study when I was less than a year old. So my early childhood, I actually grew up in the U.S. We returned to Nigeria when I was 9 years old in 1981. I'm dating myself there. I probably shouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I did the last year of primary school there, and then went on to secondary school. I finished secondary school. I spent a year doing A-levels, and then I gained admission to the university to study medicine. So after my first 2 years of university education, I changed schools and I transferred to the University of Benin, where I graduated with a degree in medicine in 1998 as the best graduating student in my class. Following graduation, I did the mandatory internship in the same hospital for a year, after which I proceeded for the once again mandatory youth service, the National Youth Service Program. It's a program that's run in Nigeria whereby every university graduate spends a year as a youth corporal serving the nation in some capacity.
Wow. Is that similar to like an army, but for medical?
No, everybody, not only medical graduates, all graduates.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Usually they get posted to teach in secondary schools.
Okay. Yeah,
but I was working as a medical hospital in a general hospital in Ebonyi State.
Okay. Okay. Up to what year was that?
This was 1999 to 2000.
Right.
Yeah, so I finished my youth service in November of 2000, and I went back home to Benin City, which is where I lived and where I graduated. I then started applying for a residency, surgical residency. I take it there are three stages to the surgical residency exams. There's a primary examination, a part one examination, and a part two or final examination. During my service year, I had taken and passed the primary examinations, so I was now eligible to begin a residency program.
Ah, very good.
Yeah. So, but then instead of being eligible, I then spent most of the next year waiting to start.
Ah, excellent. Yeah. Okay, so when did you come to Ireland?
Yeah. Okay, I started my residency in 2001, and I passed my part two exams in November of 2006, after 5 years. Then having finished with residency, I was trying to decide what to do next. So I was applying for jobs all over. And a friend of mine who had emigrated to Ireland earlier told me about the basic surgical training program here, to which I applied and was successful. Sorry, I should mention that during my residency in 2004, I had written the PLAB examinations. That's the Physician's Licensing and Assessment Board examinations, which are required for practice in the UK. So right. I was eligible for UK licensure. And my friend then told me that the Republic of Ireland had been accepting the PLAB examination to register doctors up until 2004. But in 2004, they said they were no longer going to accept it.
Oh, so from the UK?
From the UK, yes.
Oh, okay.
So the window was closing. So I sent in my forms there, and I actually managed to get registration with the Irish Medical Council just before they stopped it.
Oh, in 2004. Okay.
So at the time I applied, I was then eligible to be registered here in Ireland. So I was successful in my application. I was then invited for an interview. So I came for the interview in early 2007,
right.
And it was held in Limerick.
Okay.
Where once again I was successful in the scheme and I was given rotations. There are four rotations in the scheme of 6 months each. Three of my rotations were in Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda.
Okay.
And the fourth was in St. James Hospital in Dublin.
Okay, not so far away from me.
Yeah.
So can you give the listeners, you know, somebody coming from your background, what was it like working in Our Lady's Hospital as a surgeon? Can you give us some insight to that?
Well, coming from, as I like to call it, a resource-poor environment,
yeah,
there were a few challenges, but basically medicine is medicine. it was more a matter of adjusting to, I don't know whether to call them the traditions or basically just the way things are done here.
Okay, so that was the adjustment piece.
Yeah, that was the adjustment period, but it wasn't very difficult.
No, anything else?
No, I suppose it was a lot easier for me because I had basically already completed a surgical residency. And if I had stayed back home, I would have been made a consultant. But here I was starting at the bottom of this, at the bottom of the ladder again, as an SHO or a senior house officer.
Okay, a lot of qualifications, professionals come over, i.e., physios from Poland and other countries, and they literally are not recognized over there. What was that like for you? As you say, you're bottom of the ladder now. Yeah. You could have been a consultant. How was that for you?
Well, basically, I knew what I was getting into. I knew the job was dangerous before I took it.
Oh yeah, you knew the territory you were going to be swimming in.
I knew what I was expecting. Yeah.
Is that difficult for other doctors coming over?
It can be for some. I suppose for a lot of people, especially a lot of doctors, a big thing with them is ego. They feel they've achieved so much and done so well to be doctors and to have reached a certain level of seniority. And it's difficult for them to come and be asked to start again from the beginning. But it was never really for me. As far as I was concerned, I was working and I was getting paid. And that was the important thing.
Okay. Well, look, I know you now a little while, and one thing I do see, which is that you're very humble. You've got great humility, and that's what's something that really shines out from you. So, look, you've had an injury in 2013. You had a stroke. Can you talk me through that?
Yeah. Well, basically, at the end of... Okay, now, after the basic surgical training here, I returned to Nigeria to take up a job as a consultant. But then, for several reasons, one of them was I decided I wanted to write the exit examinations or the fellowship examinations of the Royal College of Surgeons. So I decided to return here to work again and take the exams. So at the end of my first year of work, I started to experience headaches, which I assumed were just down to stress or something, and I played them off. Now, I remember I wrote the exams, and then I returned home again briefly. This was meant just to be a brief holiday. So while I was at home, I actually have no clear recollection of the events. But basically, my wife told me that I woke up one morning and I was acting basically stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just your average male stupidity, no.
Nothing like that.
Okay.
Basically, she took me to the hospital where they admitted me and were investigating me.
Yeah.
And then she said after a couple of days, I got up one afternoon and said I was going to the bathroom, and I immediately collapsed, and I was unable to get back up. Now, I don't remember this all. This is all secondhand information.
And was this in Ireland at the time?
No, this was back home in Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the next thing I remember was, it must have been about 3 or 4 days later, I remember waking up in a hospital bed and realizing I couldn't move the left half of my body.
Right.
And I knew immediately I'd had a stroke.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was in the hospital there for another 3 or 4 weeks. Basically, at this point in time, they were still worried about whether I was going to live or not.
Right.
Then once I was stabilized, a couple of friends of mine in Ireland who had heard what had happened to me started making arrangements to bring me back, because basically the medical care and the aftercare here is much better. So much higher quality. And you have access to facilities that you wouldn't have back in Nigeria.
Okay.
So I was discharged from the hospital, and a friend of mine flew into Nigeria to actually escort me back to Ireland.
Wow.
It's Dr. Moses Ademola, very good friend.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I arrived back in Ireland on the 23rd of August, 2013.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I then went back to the hospital in Drogheda where I had worked and where I knew people and where I was known. And I basically checked into the emergency room and I was admitted. They realized it had been some time since the stroke, so there was no room for any emergency procedures for anticoagulation or thrombolysis. So I was admitted to the hospital there, and then arrangements were made to transfer me to the Beaumont, where apparently the neurology services are, it's a referral center for neurology. I was in Beaumont Hospital for, I think, about 3 or 4 months, basically beginning my rehabilitation, learning to walk again, learning to stand on my own, then learning to walk. And it was at this time I began to notice some difficulty with my vision. So I was then sent to the Mater Hospital for ophthalmology review, where it was discovered that I had retinitis, and treatment was commenced for this as well.
Okay.
Now, after a few months in the Beaumont Hospital, they felt I had stabilized, and I was transferred to the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary, where I arrived in November of 2013. Now, I arrived, as you know, in the hospital here, there's quite a structured rehabilitation program where you get a weekly timetable of activities. And I was here going through that for 2 more months, from November to January of 2014.
Yes.
In January 2014, I was discharged, and I was discharged to go home. Now, by this time, my family had come to Ireland to join me. That's my wife and my 2 young children. So immediately after discharge, it was all about getting settled in. Luckily, my wife had been lucky, and we actually found us a house to rent 2 days before I was discharged, on the 14th of January.
Wow.
So at least I had a home to go to. Then we had to get the kids into school, where they've been since, that I've been doing well.
Wow, and that's all after undergoing a brain injury. Again, and you just touched on there, the sight, as in percentage-wise, how much of your sight have you lost? I know you're legally blind now. What would you say, 80%, 90%?
I'd say about 70 or 80%.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, and then on top of your brain injury on top of that, that's unbelievable. So, after being diagnosed with a significant brain injury, what kind of difficulties were you experiencing then?
Well, then I suppose my biggest difficulty was coming to grips with my new limitations. Luckily for me, I suppose, if you can call it lucky, I had very little cognitive impairment.
Okay.
Yeah. As in, most of my higher functions were intact. I could still think clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I could still calculate. My executive functions were good. Mm-hmm. But the thing that troubled me the most was I couldn't read, and that was more because of my vision than anything else.
Okay.
Now, in the course of my treatment, as a result of, I suppose you'd call them side effects of medication, I developed cataracts in both eyes.
Wow.
Yes, and I had surgery to take them out. So at the moment, I'm technically what they call aphakic. It means I don't have lenses in either eye.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I have contact lenses usually to help me see. But I found out, because I don't know whether it's because of the procedure or because of my own individual idiosyncrasies, they tend not to stay in. I tend to lose them a lot.
Right, and finding them again must be really difficult.
Yeah, it's basically impossible.
But yet yesterday you were able to play football, and before that you were able to play badminton. That's why I find you so fascinating.
I have enough vision to track. I can track brightly coloured objects.
Like, we've played volleyball before and badminton, and it kind of blows me away how you do that. You're unbelievable.
Yeah.
So would you say, as though that whole tournament event, would you think that you lost your identity?
Yes, actually I did, because a lot of my identity was based around work and career. So I suppose one of the first things I had to do was to find myself again, or re-identify myself.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what has that been?
I think now, if you ask me now, I would say I identify more as father and husband, where before my primary identity would have been as a doctor.
Right. Wow, and it's amazing we do is in life, isn't it? We identify what we're qualified as. Yeah, a family member, a brother, a sister is usually secondary.
Yes. But after a trauma like this, it becomes the primary thing. I suppose you just have to cling to whatever you have.
Was it difficult adjusting from the identity change?
Yes, it was for me. Because I suppose throughout my career, throughout my education, I've always been what you would call a fairly high flyer. As I mentioned, I graduated at the top of my class.
Yeah.
And also at the top of the residency program. That's for the entire West Africa.
See, that's the thing. I've had this conversation with other people that have suffered significant brain injuries and have had trauma in their life. Your life sounds to me very identical to... You seem like identical to the way you were before. A high achiever, a hard worker, humble. To me, you still seem to have the same qualities. You seem to be the same person. I know that's kind of weird to say, but you're so hardworking, you're so clever, you're even kind of mastering what it is to have a trauma injury. You've seemed to have mastered that. Would you agree?
I'm trying to. I suppose I'm still working on it. Yeah. I suppose the thing is, underlying character doesn't really change. It just is expressed differently in different circumstances.
Yeah, but people that have had injuries similar to yourself, they don't get that. They do. They think they've changed and they don't like the whole... But the soul and the person that's still left there shines out. You know, I've seen people that have a huge work ethic before their injury. And after injury, nothing has changed. they're still the same person. They go on to become successful, whatever they do, whether that's in voluntary work or other projects that they take on. They seem to just be successful, even though they had an injury. But with people that are not successful for and are not really comfortable with themselves, that shines true as well. Would you agree?
Yes. I'd say basically you are what you are. You just will express yourself through whatever outlets are available to you. And certain types of people will work harder to create more outlets for themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's like in school, some people that don't need to work hard and they just breeze through school, and then when they have a significant brain injury and they're on a program, they find it difficult to change how they work, to start working harder, trying to remember things and study. What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's very true. I was one of those people. I never used to study throughout primary school and secondary school. It was only when I got into medical school that I actually learned how to study for the first time.
Okay, so so that's a skill you built up.
Yes.
Absolutely. Just for the audience, your doctor, or your wife is a doctor as well. She's studying in the UK.
Yeah, she is.
So you're at home, you're minding the two kids.
Yes.
So you're blind, you've had a trauma, brain injury, you're 80% vision, and you're minding two kids, your wife's in the UK. Yeah. How difficult is that?
Very difficult. Especially two active boys. But I have the great help. We have a live-in minder, a young man from Brazil.
Yeah.
So he helps me with most of the mundane things. Chasing the kids around, making sure they brush, making sure they take a bath, making sure they're dressed for school.
Brilliant, that's excellent.
Yeah. See, one of the things is, no matter what, you can never do anything alone. You always need help and support.
Yeah.
And that's why I find this program so good.
This is the program you're in.
I'm in the RTU, the Rehabilitative Training Unit at the National Rehabilitation Hospital.
So that's for cognitive rehabilitation.
Yes.
Increase independence, return to work, return to the community, college, you know, you have to achieve those goals there.
I would like to, yeah. My main goal is to return to work.
What would that be? So what's the future for you doctors?
At this point, I don't know. I'd say given my current limitations, a return to clinical practice would be difficult or impossible even. But then I have all this experience which I don't want to go to waste. So ideally, I would like to find a position where I could teach.
Yeah, I know that you sat exams for GP. You were successful with the theory side. Was there other parts that you failed because of the psych?
Yes. The exam actually had two portions.
Yeah.
Was all the theory exam. As in, I found out the first part of the exam, I was able to do it fairly easily because the format was fairly straightforward.
Okay.
And the second part, it wasn't like so much that I didn't have the information or the knowledge necessary. It was just the mechanics of ticking the right boxes or moving the boxes where they needed to be moved to.
Okay.
I couldn't handle with vision.
It was just a mechanical sort of things. Yeah. Wow. Again, that's so impressive. You also applied for a master's. As well. Talk me through that.
Yes. I've actually applied for several, but I've been unsuccessful so far.
Okay. So you were looking to do a master's in OT in, was it Cork?
Yes. I applied to the University College Cork for a master's program in occupational health. Yes. And there's also a master's program in the National University of Ireland in Maynooth. It's called Global Health and Immunology. I applied for that as well. And I was unsuccessful with both of them. I never actually got any feedback from either as to why or to what my problem was.
Okay, you were also looking into employment in Trinity College at one stage. Has that come to fruition at all for you?
No, it hasn't. Basically, Trinity College was looking for demonstrators in anatomy, which is something I thought I might be able to handle in my present state.
Okay.
But once again, the problem I had then, although I understand now that they have a disability office that could have helped me out, I didn't understand it. I was not aware of this at the time, and okay. I just couldn't navigate the website to apply.
Wow. Oh, yeah, with the vision and that, looking on their website. I suppose that if you link in with the officer, maybe you could get some support on that with their open day is coming up.
Yeah, no, their open day was actually last month. It was 9th of December.
Was it?
Yes.
All right. I thought it was this month, sorry. So what is the future for you? What's your plans? What's Azosa going to be doing?
Well, my plans, they center more now around family, so it kind of depends on where my family is and what they're doing. But for me personally, I would like to see myself teaching.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any preference?
ideally something I'm comfortable with. Now, I don't think I'll be teaching in a clinical area because most clinical teaching presupposes that you have patients to use to teach students. And that's something, I don't think I'll be doing. But basically, preclinical sciences would be ideal for me, teaching anatomy or physiology.
Wow. That's, you know, Magic Minds is all about sitting down, for me, sitting down hearing people's story, and I know your story, and it just blows me away. You know, you've had a significant injury, you've had the eye problems from a different country, but yet you're looking to do masters, you're looking to do, to just keep progressing. It's just fascinating. Like, this, you're an absolute inspiration for me. You know, I'm blown away by your story. I'm blown away by your humanity, humility, and everything about you. I just think you're a wonderful guy. Look, that's all I want to talk to you about today. Thanks very much. I really appreciate it. I hope this is motivation for other people. I hope it's inspirational for other people. It absolutely inspires for me, and I'm sure the listeners will love it. Thank you for joining Magic Minds. You'll find us on Twitter at ZBanda. You'll also find us on Facebook, magicminds.com, and we'll have a website coming up soon. As always, Cora, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, how are you getting on? What did you think of that? I thought that was absolutely deadly. I really, really enjoyed it. I loved it. You probably could tell by my voice, I was a little bit nervous. I always get a little bit nervous. A little bit nervous, probably a little bit excited. He's just an amazing guy. I absolutely love it. I find it a little bit difficult, you know, interviewing somebody that's blind, you know. It's very hard for them to read your body language and you read theirs and when to come in and when for them to come in. But I think we done all right. We didn't have to do too much editing. We just played and we just kept talking, you know. He's such a great guy. And probably the sound is not great, you know. It sounded like I was in the back of a Fiat Punto in a back cave in, I don't know, Afghanistan. So I'm really, really sorry about that. Hopefully that didn't ruin your experience or took anything away from the quality of the interview. But I think the quality of the interview was in the words that Azosa spoke, and I'm really impressed with that. You know, he's such a great guy, and he's very generous with his time. You know, he's been always generous with his time with me over the times that I've worked with him. I was delighted that I could bring you that show. So yeah. So that's today's show. It's not as long as the other ones. So again, thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends, family, or give it a delicious, beautiful review on SoundCloud, iTunes, or Anchor. I don't know if you can review on Anchor, but if you can't, that's cool. Again, I'd like to always say thanks to Niall Riley from Rooney Graphics. If you need any printing or graphics done, they're your men. And the lads from Scrapture, if you haven't tuned into their podcast, please do if you're interested in combat sports. Those guys have a savage podcast going. I really love it. Also, big shout out to my mate Ty Glooby. He has a yoga class in town in Harrington Street. It's amazing. He's a similar background to myself, sports science and health. He's in the industry a long time. So there's no bullshit about his class. It's just sound. He's a good lad. It's a bit of crack. You know, it's not too super serious. He's a cool guy. They're on Meetup. They're on Harrington Street. It's a Wednesday, 7:15 to 8:15. It's a really cool class. So check that out. Okay, so that's all we have time for today. Thanks very, very much for listening to the show. I will look forward to talking to you guys again. Oh, just a reminder. Actually, we have two amazing shows coming up. One is with Shane Kirkwood on suicide, depression, and life. He's a sound lad. I really enjoyed this interview. And then we have also Maeve Nolan from the National Rehabilitation Hospital. She's a clinical psychologist. We talk about mental health with people in spinal, and just mental health in general. She's such a knowledgeable person and such generous with her time. She's a really good egg. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Okay, wherever you are in the world, go off, mind yourself, take care, bye bye.